You ever been in a really tight spot and have somebody come and put their arm around you and say something like, hey, it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. We probably all have. That's a fairly common way, isn't it? To try to provide help to somebody in need by telling them it's going to be all right. My guess is if we went around the room this morning, some would say, you know, I remember a time when somebody said that exact thing to me, and I found it to be a source of great help. And I responded by saying, thank you for reminding me of that truth. But I imagine that there would be others who would say, you know, when I was in a time of trial, a person came to me and said that, and I found those words to be trite, hollow, maybe even offensive. In fact, you may have even said back to them, how in the world could you possibly say that to me right now? This is going to be anything but all right. Well, what makes the difference? Why is it that some people would hear those words and be comforted and others would hear those words and be offended? Makes the difference? A lot of possible answers to that question, I'm sure. Here's one of them. It's the knowledge and the experience and the resources of the person making the statement. See, if it's somebody who has no idea what they're talking about and they say it's going to be all right, like, how does that help? It doesn't. But on the other hand, if this person really knows in some way it is going to be okay, or maybe they've experienced the exact same thing and they came out okay, or maybe they have the ability to make it all right, well, all of a sudden those words have an entirely different impact on you. They give direction, they give comfort, they give hope. It's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. We're coming up on a very important date for the Byers family next month. It is our son Andrew's 18th birthday. And yeah, that'll be a happy day for sure. And we've always viewed Drew as a special gift from God, and we are enjoying the possibility of celebrating that wonderful milestone in his life. But it also reminds us of what happened about 4 weeks after he was born. Some of you remember this. We adopted Drew at birth, so it was the middle of the winter. He's kind of croupy. Most parents have faced that, huh? Croupy, all stuffed up, not breathing well. And every parent knows what it's like to try to decide, should we call the doctor now or not? Should we call the doctor or not? Hard decisions to make. And we had been advised somewhere along the line that week, well, what you need to do when your child is croupy, you get the whole steam bath in the bathroom thing going on. You do that at night and everything's going to be fine. You ever done that? Many of us have. And so Chris actually did that. My wife, she got the steam thing going on in the bathroom in the middle of the night and had Drew in there. And she came later and woke me up. And I won't go into why she was doing that and I was doing the sleep thing. I can't remember those exact details. I'm sure I was praying. But anyway, shame on me, but that's not what we're talking about. Right now we're talking about croup. And so she came and woke me up and said, Steve, I think Drew is actually stopping breathing. There are times where it looks like he's not breathing at all. So I came in and we watched him for a while. And sure enough, at least from our appearance, it looked like he stopped breathing. And then he would start again, but then he would stop. And we were as frightened as all get out, you can imagine. And so we try not to do this, but we called one of our church's pediatricians in the middle of the night, Dr. Thomas, and we explained what was going on with Drew, and he said, listen, I think you need to get him to the hospital right away, and I'll meet you down there. And we were thinking, frankly, well, okay, maybe he'll have some sort of a need for a minor breathing treatment, and we'll do that for an hour or two, probably be home in time to get to work on time the next morning. I mean, no big deal. In the next couple of hours, we find out it was a whole lot bigger deal than we realized, because his breathing problem wasn't because of the croup. It was because he was dehydrated. And the reason he was so dehydrated was because his kidneys were not working. And I don't want to be crass, but frankly, he was literally urinating himself to death. His kidneys were not working. His body was shutting down. All of a sudden, we're dealing now with what appeared to be a life or death issue. We were scared, to say the least. Well, the rest of the day, Dr. Thomas kept doing all sorts of tests. It really was one of those days when you come to appreciate the scientific aspect of medicine. Because he's just walking down the diagnostic tree to try to determine why Drew's kidneys weren't working, and within 24 hours he knew him. The ultimate problem wasn't his breathing. The ultimate problem wasn't even his kidneys. The ultimate problem was his pituitary gland under his brain, that little organ that secretes a hormone that tells your kidneys to work. And Drew's pituitary gland either was non-existent or it certainly wasn't working. And he's explaining all this to us, and our heads are just spinning. I mean, how did Dr. Thomas go from the lungs, breathing, to the kidneys, to the pituitary gland that quickly? I mean, it's simply amazing. And then he said the good news. And frankly, as parents, we were really ready to hear some good news. He said the good news is an artificial hormone has been developed that simulates that same effect as what a healthy pituitary gland produces on its own. And he said, we need to get Drew on that right away. But, and I'm not sure these are the exact same words he used, but this is certainly the sentiment. He looked right at Chris and me and he said, it's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. And the reason those words had such a powerful impact on us was, if the man who was able to connect the dots that quickly about the specific nature of Drew's problem is also aware of a solution that has proven to work, we're going to take comfort in his words. It's going to be all right. Now let me ask you this. Have you figured out that we have a problem in this world? That we are facing what theologian Cornelius Plantinga famously called in his wonderfully titled book, things are not the way they're supposed to be. You figured that out? And I'm not talking about a breathing problem. I'm not talking about a kidney problem. I'm not talking about a pituitary problem. I'm talking about a soul problem. I mean, something is desperately wrong in our relationship with God and in our relationship with other people. There's evidence of that every place you turn. Things are not the way they're supposed to be. They're anything but all right. So we're coming up on another Christmas where men and women from our armed forces will be away from their families serving in harm's way. Why? Because things aren't the way they're supposed to be. That's why. Or a well-known diplomat, Richard Holbrooke, who appeared to be reasonably healthy just last week, serving this country in Afghanistan and other places in the world on behalf of peace. Now we're having his funeral because things aren't the way they're supposed to be. Even on a ridiculous level, a pro football team is losing the game. And so as the running back goes by, one of the coaches on the opposing team actually trips the player while he's running on the field, on national television, and now has lost his job and probably his career. What was he thinking? I mean, things are just not the way they're supposed to be. But listen, we all know this. We don't have to look at world events. We don't have to look at professional sports. We just have to look in the mirror to make this point. In our own souls, at our own thoughts and relationships, is there anybody who can look at this mess with authority and say, it's going to be all right? It actually can be all right. And we all know the answer to that, don't we? It's not some pastor, it's not some other human being, it's the God of heaven and earth. And in the musical we're about to enjoy together, one of the verses of Scripture you're going to hear is this one. It's Psalm 46:1. God is our refuge and our strength. He's a very present help in our time of trouble. See, it's possible to say of your relationship with the Lord. It's possible for you to say in your relationships with other people. It's possible for you to say of any specific trial that you might be facing right now. It's going to be all right. It's going to be all right. Now, why should we believe that? Here's a couple of reasons. One is God knows the exact nature of the problem. Do you believe that? God knows why it's not all right. He knows the exact nature of the problem better than you or me. See, why aren't things the way they're supposed to be? because we live in a world that's cursed by sin, and we're each born with a sinful nature beating in our breasts. And I understand that it's Christmas time and we're supposed to be light and airy. Do we understand that Christmas time came because of a particular problem? The problem of sin, including the sin in your own heart. You were born that way. I mean, honestly, think about it. Did your mom have to teach you how to lie? Did she have to teach you how to disobey? Did she have to teach you how to rebel? Huh? Did she? Be honest, it's close to Christmas. No, that was part of your standard equipment. That's why we sin, and that's why we suffer. And God, because He's holy, understands that far better than we. Just like Dr. Thomas, because he's a physician, was able to cut through all the issues and come up with the precise diagnosis. And here's my question for you this morning. It's a really important one. Are you willing to accept God's analysis of the problem? You willing to accept God's diagnosis? Because if you're not, I need to love you now as a pastor. You could not say with authority that things are going to be all right. See, Chris and I could have continued to do the steamy air in the bathroom thing all night long. It would have never addressed the problem. And eventually our son would have lost his life. Well, thankfully, this isn't the end of the story. The problem, sin. See, that's why we have Christmas. That's why God had to come down. God loved us so much that He sent His Son to be the antidote, to be the substitute, to be the payment for our sin. Have you thought about it recently? God. You couldn't pay for your sin by yourself. You couldn't earn enough righteousness on your own merit. God had to come down. Think of that. That's why the psalmist also said this, He also brought me up out of a horrible pit, out of the miry clay. He set my feet upon a rock and established my steps. He's put a new song in my mouth, praise to our God. Many will see it in fear and will trust in the Lord. Well, how does God do that? They pull us up out of the miry pit. Here's the answer. Through making a personal decision to trust Christ as Savior and Lord, to let His shed blood be the payment for your sin, to make Him the Lord of your life. See, to accept His diagnosis and then appropriate His treatment plan. And for a person who's made that decision, you'll hear a lot about this in the musical. There's great joy. There's great joy because of what Jesus has done for us. With authority, we can say, both now and forever, it's going to be all right.